Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. I'm standing outside the Dublin Bus Broadstone Depot near Fibsborough in Dublin city centre. I'm here to meet Ray Coyne, the Chief Executive of Dublin Bus, who's going to shortly be giving me a tour of this fine facility, a 15 million euro investment by the state company to make it into a modern depot to house and maintain its fleet of buses. Ray is going to be telling me about the COVID-19 impact on Dublin Bus. He'll also be talking about its plans to diversify into e-scooters and beyond. And we'll be talking a little bit about the future of work and also the future of public transport in our capital city. But first, Ray is going to take me on a little tour of Broadstone.
So, as you can see, we're in the middle of what's a new restored building. We have the original steel columns that we've all kept. And this originally would have been a railway station. And so you can see some of the railway tracks still in the concrete, which are a good reminder of the historical past of Broadstone. We do have our overhead gantry cranes, which we refurbished. That's part of the old, but also in this building, we have some of the new modern technology. So what we have in front of us are three hoists for our buses, so you can just raise the bus off the ground, do some work underneath that, bring the buses down to floor level again. And inside we have pits where the bus would drive in on a level and the mechanics would go down underneath the buses and maintain them. So a nice mix of the old and the new in this building. You can see the old walls, which would have been here in 1847. So in order to build a new building of this size, it requires a lot of concrete, which obviously has a big impact on the environment. So we've required 80% less concrete to develop this building. And the concrete that we use is eco-friendly concrete, so it's 15 times less impactful on the environment than traditional concrete. So,
Ray, can I just ask you, how many people are, how many Dublin Bus employees are based on this site?
So in Dublin Bus altogether, we've 3,500 employees. In the footprint of the Broadstone site and operations as a transport hub for Dublin, we'll have well over 1,000 employees. In this Broadstone facility itself, with our drivers operation, mechanics, our supervisors, we'll have over 400 employees. In our Fibsborough site, there's over 600 employees. And then you've got Bus Éireann, which operate out of the same site as us. So in terms of the local economy, engagement, our partners in Dublin 7, and we work closely with Fibsborough Tidy Towns as part of the development of this site. We worked with Swift Conservation Ireland. We've got the first semi-state to have swift nesting boxes as part of the overall build. And we have some nice wildflower gardens, so we need to have amenities for all these people and employees to be able to use. So when you look around the wider Fibsborough catchment area, a lot of redevelopment been done in this area. There's a lot of downstream employment created by having an employment centre, which is essentially between 1,300 and 1,500 employees. So, you know, all our employees will go out, they'll get a sandwich, they'll get a coffee, they'll buy a newspaper. So I think it's really good for the area.
What's the investment in this site?
Total investment is 15 million euro. Strategic asset for the state. A location that has historically been a transport location. And I think it's wonderful to see a building that was built in 1847 as a public transport building, still been used for the purpose it was designed for. And I think that's really good for the city.
So, Ray, we're obviously in a depot where you house your hop-on, hop-off buses, and they all look spick and span at the minute. They're all in splendid green. There's about 20 of them housed here at the minute, but unfortunately, no tourists to hop on and hop off them. So tell us a little bit about that and how that side of the business has been impacted.
Yeah, in terms of our Do Dublin tour buses, part of our commercial operations, which this time last year was a 23 million euro revenue business. When we came into last March, naturally the tourism industry dried up, so we made a quick decision looking to what the expectations were for the outrun for 2020, and we ceased operations, put the buses in storage, which you can see here now in the reconditioned area of Broadstone, and we'd be hopeful that they'd be back in use. If not this year, certainly for the tourist season, in 2022, all things been good.
Right. So even with the vaccination program being rolled out and the fact that the government is hopeful that, you know, the majority of adults will be done by September and so forth, and we're all being encouraged to staycation, you reckon these are going to remain housed here for the rest of this year?
Well, we monitor obviously what government guidelines are. We talk to our industry partners in the tourism industry. The one good thing about the bus services is you can mobilise them very quickly. So we look at a four-week lead-in. If all the indications are that there'll be a significant tourism presence, you know, we're readily available to be able to assist the tourism partners. And of course, one of the good things with a hop-on, hop-off tour bus it's open top, so there's plenty of ventilation in those. And so if that's the, if the city is able to take tourists in a safe manner, we'll certainly be front and centre on that.
So Ray, your fleet is going to change over the next number of years. Tell us about that move towards electric and what it's going to involve for Dublin Bus.
Yeah, I mean, the move to electrification is part of our sustainability strategy. We've a long history of actually trialling new technologies in our buses, going back 20 years when we had compressed natural gas buses. What we have coming into Broadstone now is plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. So you can see down there, there's some parking bays, the infrastructure going in. And that will allow the buses to operate a number of kilometres in the city centre on pure electric, so zero tailpipe emissions. That's most welcome. Our ultimate plan in terms of sustainability is we want to halve our emissions by 2030. We will do that through the purchase of battery-only electric vehicles. The NTA will purchase vehicles on our behalf, and we will have a significant number of hybrid electric coming in this year, up to 100. And we think by 2022, we'll start to introduce full battery electric vehicles in our fleet. And 2030, we will have 65% reduction in our total emissions.
Okay, Ray, thanks for that tour. Let's go and have a sit down now and talk a little bit more in depth about how Dublin Bus has been impacted by COVID and your future plans. So, Ray, we're currently in level 5 lockdown, which means I think that only 25% of your capacity is available. And obviously people have been encouraged to work from home, so maybe that's not such an issue, the 25%, given that so many people are working from home. But maybe you can just tell us a little bit about how COVID-19 has impacted on Dublin Bus. I think in 2019, you carried about 143 million passengers. What was the outcome in 20?
Yeah, so like every other organisation, COVID has had a huge impact. One of the key things, I suppose, that has benefited us as we've gone through COVID is we were in a good place pre-COVID, like the economy, really, in terms of the fundamentals of the business. We're in good shape. We had good performance, we had good investment, good fleet of vehicles and employees. So I think in the years leading into 2020, we were in good shape. That certainly benefited us as we went through COVID. So COVID probably had an impact, obviously, on financials, the way we work as well. And then there was around the employees, how we need to manage the employees. So I think financially, there was obviously a big decrease in passenger numbers as government introduced the restrictions and people working from home. But at the same time, there was significant engagement with government around the status of an essential service. And so Dublin Bus was classed as an essential service. We're not frontline employees, but it was recognised early on that you need the public transport system so people can still move around the city. And while the work from home was in place, there was still 50,000 people a day moving around the city last March and April at the height of the original lockdown. What were those people doing on our buses? They were travelling in to open up the essential services that people needed to use. So these were doctors, there were nurses, there was people who were stacking shelves in shops, they were manning the tills in shops. They were opening up the pharmacies, and then there was people who obviously had to use that to get there. So
you had 143 million in 2019. What was the outcome?
So the outcome for 2020, we'd sign off on our accounts, but it was a 50% reduction in passenger numbers and a commensurate reduction in what would have been your revenue off the passenger base. So that's quite a significant reduction. We did manage our fleet, as one of the benefits of, when we came into COVID-19, nobody knew what was happening. Like, nobody knew how long it was going to last, what it would look like. What we did know early on was going to be more difficult coming out of it and going into it. And we engaged with our partners, global transport partners. And what we were able to do very early on was look to Asia and see what was happening over in Asia with the public transport operators. And what became apparent fairly quickly was a couple of things. One, The cities were going to be locked down, but the public transport was always going to operate. So even in Wuhan, the buses still ran in Wuhan. They didn't carry people, but they carried groceries and they carried medical supplies, but they still operated. And so what we did was we said, look, this is going to be a long term. This is going to be an issue, and there will obviously be an impact on government resources in terms of finances, capital expenditure, and the economy. So we introduced some practices, work practice changes, to reduce overtime and to manage our cost base. We did reduce the operations on the road. So while our passengers went down to minus 90%, 90%, we still operated 82% of our services on the road every day. And that was to make sure that those who did travel could do so in a socially distant manner, but also to make sure that mobility options were there for those people.
I suppose just to give people a context for maybe how it's impacting on the business at the minute, how many buses in your fleet, how many would, pre-pandemic, how many would have been on the road on a given day?
So we have a fleet of 1,000 buses, and on the road you'd have 850 vehicles.
850, yeah. Okay. So today, how many buses will you have on the road?
So it's around 690 buses on the road today.
Okay, and so it's still a substantial number.
Yeah, a substantial number of buses. And what we need to do is keep the city moving. People still need to make essential journeys. What we'll carry today, we'll carry around 130,000 customers today. They'll be coming in for work. You know, we'll have new customers coming in today using the bus to go to school. They need to do that.
So that's interesting. In the first lockdown, you were carrying 50,000, March, April, around that time. Today it's about 130,000.
Yeah. So, but
33 times as many.
Yeah.
Even though we're in level five.
There's a significant change, but I think the lockdown levels that we have now, it's slightly different than the previous lockdown that we had last year. So there's some additional services open now that wouldn't have been open back last March. So, you know, that in itself would attract additional footfall, office workers. So what we'll see in the next few weeks is as people plan to open up further retail, so there'll be people coming in advance of the retail actually being open, because the employees will come in to get the stores ready to get the new lines of stock out. So it's important that Dublin Bus is there to provide the service, because the business community needs to know that their customers and their employees can get to the place of work in a safe manner, and that will drive the economy forward then. So there are additional people using the service, but I think it is a slightly different lockdown than it was the last time. So there's more.
So on average, how many people sitting on a bus on a given journey?
So the most we can take on a journey now with 25% is, you know, you're talking just north of 30 passengers. So we monitor that on a daily basis. If additional customers are coming out in particular areas, we'll add an extra bus tomorrow. So we'll have operated this morning. I got a report in this morning saying we were generally fine. So, you know, and obviously we have people out there with the return to schools. If there's an area identified where we need additional buses, we will put them on. And we've the resilience built into the system that we've drivers there available, and we've buses available. So I think our average carrying, obviously, you know, the off-peak there's less. So the average carrying per bus now is in the order of 20 a bus. But that obviously fluctuates. So what we did experience, you know, traditionally your peak commute journey time would have been a kind of 7 to 8 type time. And what we did see during the lockdown was that shifted. So it shifted a lot earlier. And that was a dynamic around what people, you know, which customers were able to work from home, what office type activity could work from home, and what people needed to come in and access. So our early morning peak is now around between 5:30 and 7:00, which is, you know, so, and that's a lot of people going, you know, where were we taking some of these? We were taking them out to the Pfizer and the pharmaceutical companies that were, you know, helping to combat COVID, into hospitals. Early morning staff going into hospital. So we put some additional shuttle buses on where that was identified. So last year we had it was a nice initiative. We had a shuttle bus on for 6 months for the Mater Hospital in conjunction with ourselves, the Mater Hospital, from a hotel car park. And so they had free parking in a hotel car park. We provided a free shuttle bus. And that was just, I suppose, our way of trying to help and recognise the work, because you've the essential workers, and I've seen how busy our employees are, and you know, but the essential workers, the frontline workers, what they've done is extraordinary, and they have to do it every day. Sure. You know, and a lot of those would be Dublin Bus customers, and we, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, if we say that there's a bus there at a particular time, it's got to be there for those people at a particular time. And we've, you know, it's something we're very proud of, that we've been able to do that. Really positive feedback. I think strong recognition of the whole ecosystem. It's not disparate parts of the community. It's everything needs to be integrated. So we need to make sure Dublin Bus is there to provide access. And as we come in, you know, that'll be even more important now as we come into a growth economy. So, you know, we're talking to employers, we're talking to agencies saying, what's the future work look like? How can Dublin Bus and public transport help that? It'll change, but we need to be able to, you know, step into that
to give comfort to businesses as we all emerge from this.
What about the financial hit to the business? I think revenues were in 2019 were 260 million. I saw it reported earlier this year that revenues for last year probably will finish up around 110 million. Is that about right? Is that ballpark?
In terms of the finances, look, we have to finish off our audited accounts. But yeah, I mean, there's two revenue streams we have for 2020. And there's obviously Farebox revenue, which is the customers paying on the bus directly. And then we would have grants from the government via the NTA. Public service obligation grant. So, you know, there's been a step change in those this year. So our Farebox revenue would have decreased, you know, 50% off what would have been 260 million in that order. Our operating costs, we did reduce our operating costs. As I said, we came into COVID in a really good shape. We maintain that. We're very conscious in Dublin Bus that we receive taxpayers' funding. So Every euro that we invest, we need to make sure it's invested as efficiently as possible.
So just to be clear, the 260 million, that relates to overall income or just what you take from fares and costs?
So that would have been fares. And then what you would have, the way the public transport systems work, is you have an overall operating cost.
Yeah.
That was north of 300 million. And the difference then will be made up from public service obligations. So, and that would be, you know, you're operating a bus at 10 past 10 at night out somewhere. So we operate 24-hour services. They're not full, but they do a public service remit. So what we have been able to do and continuous focus on is reduce what would be classed as the public service obligation on the taxpayer. So over the last 7 years, we've been able to reduce that year on year. Last year, that finished out at 40 million on a 300 million euro contract. And that'd be one of the kind of strongest performances in Europe. With regards to the service that we did carry out. What we engaged with the government early last year, and we will continue to operate the services and be funded for the service that we operated. And the government would recognise that, well, the revenue won't be there because we're imposing a 25% reduction, recognising that people still need to go to hospitals, go to doctors. So there would be a gap there that would be funded by the government and via the NTA.
What was the financial support from the government last year?
So the final outrun for our total operations would be north of 270 million, but again, yet to be audited. So our Farebox revenue would have been would have decreased by around 50%. Again, to be just to do a few final checks with regards to auditing of financial accounts, but the government support then would have been upwards of around 170 million for last year, and that was as a result of maintaining the services that we operate. As I said, the minimum we went down to is 82% of services continued to operate, even though the capacity restrictions were there. So we did have some direct costs as a result, so less mileage operated equals less fuel. But we would have introduced significant savings at the early part of the year through overtime, rota management, annual leave. And that did two things. One, it gave our employees a break. They know where to go, but you know it was important that they were able to switch off. And B, built resilience into our system so that our employees were fresh when they were back in work, that we were able to guarantee the service for the customers to make sure that they could operate. And sure. So between the two, we were able to reduce our cost base by about 10%. And every euro that we would save on that was a euro that the government would be able to reinvest, either in other public transport services or essential services.
Ray, I suppose anybody who's used Dublin Bus over the years will have experienced at some point or another a bus that's absolutely jammed full of people. All the seats taken, lots of people standing, maybe it's a bad day, the windows are fogged up, it's wet, it's miserable. Are those days gone post-COVID? Hopefully we get out the far side of this. Or will they return? Have you figured that out yet? Because what we know now about the virus and how it's spread and social distancing and everything, I just fancy that people aren't going to want to be cheek by jowl on a bus like that.
Yeah, I mean, you look again, we can look at indicators over in Asia in terms of they'd be about 6 months ahead of us. And, you know, there's varying transformations that have happened over there in terms of the wider economy, their employment and the public transport system. So some networks are back to 100%. Pre-COVID levels of passengers. Some cities have congestions. That's 30% above pre-COVID. That's not sustainable. I think for Dublin Bus, we've been engaging with government. We've been engaging with key significant businesses to see what's their expectation of what their return to work is going to be. How can we adapt to that? How can we meet their needs? I think there's some key trends emerging. Nobody knows exactly how it's going to pan out, but I think from Dublin Bus's point of view, there'll definitely be a change in the way people integrate with public transport systems. The office, to me, the office is always going to have a future. Might be different. I think the office of the future will be an area where you collaborate with staff. You get in and you get ideas going and face to face and, you know, mix them with people. You know, that's definitely a beneficial area for the office. So I don't think people are going to come in and sit at the desk and spend 8 hours doing emails in an office. You say, no, you probably do that at home. So there will be a different dynamic around how many people come into the city or into the workplace, what time they come in at. We've seen greater flexibility from employers, which wouldn't have been there previously, that, you know, it's okay to come in at 10 o'clock in the morning and go home at 8 o'clock at night, and you're avoiding both kind of transport peaks. So I think the peaks will flatten a bit. I think we need to really watch out for congestion, the return of congestion. We monitor all the research in public transport, and there's been no empirical evidence of any spread of COVID as a result of public transportation. But, you know, people would have concerns, and, you know, they're valid concerns because the people would have those. So what we do is, you know, we've introduced significant investment in our safety systems. Our buses will be cleaned 3 times a day. They get a deep clean every month. They're washed out every night, swept out every night. We've people on site today cleaning buses. They'll be able to terminate cleaning buses. So you've got to restore customers' confidence and employers' confidence that the employers will let people go back to work in mass mode transport. Urban cities need mass mode public transportation. It doesn't work on a single mode of transport. So the private mode, there's a role for a car, but not as an individual's and at top of the hierarchy. That's not a sustainable city. So I think to work from home, there will certainly be more working from home, but if you look at what that requires, you know, it's going to require legislation, and that might be a popular thing to say, but it's going to be required. It's going to require IT infrastructure. It's going to require data security. And when you think of the industries that people are going to be asked to work from home, the data that transfers, so you're going to need data security and protocols around that. You're going to need to certainly bring people into the workplace for idea generation and stuff like that. Camaraderie. Right, that you know, people look. Yeah. We've done surveys. 80% of people say they like this. It's termed, you know, you can hear the term now, blended environment. 80% of people like that. You know, I'm grown up. I live in a house. I work out of my office 2 days a week. My office is a box room, right? But we have employees who live in an apartment, who share an apartment with others, and you know, it's easy when everybody has to do something together. Like everybody just say, yeah, we've no choice. We all have to clear out. I think what you'll have when people come back into the office and some come in and some don't, I say, you know, we got to be careful as a society that we don't get the worst of both worlds. And I think there's, you know, what we're seeing now through the recruitment process is there's people you're recruiting in now and they've no real sense of what the culture is of your organisation. And at the same time, you have people, you know, we pride ourselves that we're a company that has long-term employees. So there's going to be a risk to the Irish economy, not just Dublin Bus, that people near the retirement age may retire earlier than they would have, because the world's a different place, and it might be something that they're like, oh, I've spent 2 years locked away now, I think I just want to take a bit of time out to enjoy. They may not like what the future of work is in terms of this blended environment. So if you have a lot of knowledge going out, at the same time, you've this, you know, if you're bringing people into the organisation, you can say, how do you get the culture if they're all working from home and you never see them? And it can be done. But it's vastly different to what we have today.
And Ray, has the pandemic accelerated the move towards cashless payments on Dublin Bus?
Yeah, for sure. We have our Leap ticket on our buses. We've been trying to move people to cashless bus services for over the last decade anyway. And the way we've done that is through introduction technology. So we've our Leap card, and we've obviously other Rambler product tickets, etc. But we heavily discounted those versus cash fares. So you get 30% discount if you had a ticket rather than having to pay cash. And that was a major lever to move people across. Pre-COVID, we were 85% of our fare collection was through technology, and that was through ticketing, and 15% cash. We'll see, you know, as people come back to work, we're very low base now in terms of passengers on the bus. So, but that ratio is still there. But what we'll see in the future, we need to, and again, we're talking to the NTA about this, you need to have innovative ticketing to allow people to choose products that moves them further away from cash. We need to move away from a physical card, so your token, so, you know, pay for your phone, pay with your Apple Watch. So account-based ticketing is in place in other cities. I think COVID will expedite the investment in that here in Ireland. But I do think ultimately, you know, there's some cities that are cashless, but, you know, you need to be conscious of what's right for the people of Dublin and the people who use our bus services. And there will be people, and you need the ticketing infrastructure in place to say, look, if you can only afford to pay one cash fare today and then, you know, maybe tomorrow, you need to make sure that they still have access to the transport system. So what you can't do is exclude people by saying, look, you need to bump up front with a €20 deposit on a ticket or something, and then we'll give you a discount, because they may not have that. So that'll be a decision that needs real careful consideration. But we're effectively, you know, edging towards, you know, 90% cashless at present. And I think a lot of people's behaviours around paying for cash in stores, you see some stores now saying, look, we don't want any cash. So people move away. But I do think we carry a huge customer base from all areas. And I do think the one thing is make sure the products you have, let people get access, because public transport is about access to mobility, and those people need to travel to areas. And so there's some customers that will say, look, I'll use the bus. They might only use it once a month, and they might say, but look, you know, sure, I'm lucky to have this. You know,
you mentioned mobility. We know you for buses, but I've seen reports that you're looking at e-scooters and minivans. What are the plans?
Yeah, so I think when you look at technology and transport, you know, these industries are merging. We're no different than any other industry where technology is, you know, you look at fintech and what it's done there. You look at, I mean, you just need to look at the pharmaceutical industry, and you look at Moderna and BioNTech, like they're digital native companies, you know, that just happen to work in the pharmaceutical industry. You have the same coming into the transportation industry. These digital companies are coming in and, you know, disrupting the industry, for want of a better word. So this is an area that's been explored. COVID has probably pushed it on a few years faster than would have been. So we've been looking at some partners in Europe. And I do think the way, you know, you asked the question earlier around transportation, around working, you know, the return to work, what's going to look like? It will look different. I think it'll be integrated. People are going to want options. They're going to want transport. So it's mobility as a service. So, you know, I want to get a taxi.
Just explain to us, draw us a picture, if you like, for how e-scooters are going to be part of the Dublin bus business plan going forward.
Yeah, so if you look at, you know, there's a famous saying in transportation, and it's the difficult last mile or the difficult last kilometre. So the bus will take me so far, or the train will take me so far. How do I do my last journey in a sustainable mode? And what we've seen in Europe is the micro-mobility. So a lot of active mobility now with people cycling. E-scooters are in there. So that's, you know, can you get people, give them an easier option to get to a transport mode? So we're in Broadstone Depot now. Broadstone is a transport hub. There's a college beside us. Are there ways that you can, you know, integrate the last kilometre journey for people to sustainable modes of transport? So be it cycle to bus to micro-mobility, they might want to Lewis, they might want to Dart. How can you make that as seamless and possible as possible in terms of the ticketing infrastructure? And that's, you'd like an app, and I'd like to choose how many journeys a month I want to use, or, you know, you tell me afterwards through your AI technology what the cheapest journey would have been for me today.
So you get on the bus, you arrive at a bus stop, and there might be an e-scooter there for you to get on. Of course, they're not legal on Irish roads at the minute, but
yeah, there's legislation there. And look, we're a state-owned company. I think what we need to look at with regards to the new modes of transport is, you know, the government are progressive. They are looking at sustainable modes. I think, how do you introduce them to complement the public transport network, to complement the requirements of the citizens? And one of the things we've seen is, you know, there's street clutter with scooters. You know, I've been into European cities, and, you know, they're just, you know, scattered everywhere. You need to make sure that they're done in a responsible manner. So there's a way to regulate that. That's where we would have strong views of how they should be regulated. There's a way to operate them, and there's a fit within the public transport system. I think as you look 10 years' time, we'll have shared mobility with cars, you know, so rather than carpooling, it's shared mobility. So you might use a car at the weekend, and then somebody else will use it on the Monday, someone else on Tuesday. I think that fits in. I think the demand responsive transit, which would be minibuses, again, that's technology merging with transport operators. And instead of bus stop to bus stop, you'd have corner to corner transportation. Beyond demand, you'd have an app. you'd push in and say, look, I want to get my bus. And, you know, the algorithm will say, well, look, there'll be a bus there with you within the next 8 minutes. You go out, you jump on. There's no defined routes. It depends on what the demands are of the people at that time. You know, there'll be a few other people on the bus and it'll drop you off. Through the algorithms, through the technology, it'll say what the fastest route is. And now you've got seamless transport. You look at demand responsive transit and how it could fit into the future. A lot more people, you know, I live out in the suburbs. There's a lot more people in the local spa shop or the local coffee shop mooching around the system. A lot of them are driving there. It's not a long distance, but it might be too far for them to walk and say, well, okay, is a demand responsive transit an option for those that they're sitting at their desk, they hit their app, they know there'll be a bus down the road, they go out, jump on. 10 minutes later, they're down having their coffee and then they're back. It's a sustainable transport ecosystem, and Dublin Bus wants to be part of that. Dublin Bus has strong views on that. That's where we see the future going, and we need to make sure that with our, you know, with the large employers and with our customers, that we're meeting their needs. They'll tell us what transport systems they want, and what we need to be in position is, look, here's how we think they can best be integrated into the system.
You used to have a monopoly in this city in terms of bus transport. Go Ahead Ireland are in the market now. They've got, what, 10% of the market, and will probably get more, I would imagine, or maybe other players come into the market. I don't know. So what's the future for Dublin Bus in that environment?
Well, Dublin Bus has always been operating in a competitive environment. The National Transport Authority implement government policy with regards to the procurement of public transport services. So we do have international operators here. Some are in the public service market, others are in the private industry. We discussed outside our open top tour, so we've been in a competitive industry for 30 years there and built up a 25 million euro business. We're good performers. I think we've shown over the last year the purpose of the organisation, and that has shone true for me with all the employees, 3,500 employees every day coming to work, mobilising, making sure they came in a safe environment, being responsible. We were advising government, we were advising the NTA, we were advising other transport operators of what can be done and what could be done in public transport network. We'll continue to do that. We advise on public transportation networks, on bus connects, we advise on ticketing technology. So, you know, in Dublin Bus, we've huge skill sets, and we've discussed some of the great skills around mechanics that and what we're showing below. So, but we are in a competitive tendering environment, and we're acutely aware of that. And we've been working towards enhancing our own competitiveness and, you know, really understanding our business model. And what we need to make sure is that, A, we deliver a good service, that's a high-quality service, and make sure we're future-proof for tendering. And there will be future tendering at the minute, I've no doubt about that. We'll continue to compete with private operators on that. And competition, in any industry, competition is positive if it ends up in a better product for your consumer.
Would it make sense to privatise Dublin Bus? Why does it need to be in state ownership?
I think what you have is a state asset, and the state asset is a strategic state asset, and public transport is a strategic asset for the nation, for the recovery of the economy. And I think what we've seen the benefit of the last year is that the government having control over certain elements of the economy that we can manage. So Dublin Bus were implementing government policy rigidly, and we were implementing cost-saving measures to make sure that we were doing our bit to help in whatever way we could for the economic recovery. I think having a strategic state asset is important. It's like a utility. So the government control through the NTA with the contracts. The contracts that we have really stringent KPI targets. They're like any other operating
company.
But
the Lewis operates fine. It's not owned by the government. The operator of the Lewis isn't owned by the state.
So the operator of the Lewis operates a contract to stringent KPIs. Dublin Bus operates a contract to stringent KPIs. If Dublin Bus operates a contract to stringent KPIs that meet the needs of the citizens, I think whether it's state-owned or not state-owned is almost a theoretical question. To me, it's, are we delivering what the customer wants as efficiently as we can and to a good service? If the answer is yes, then you say, okay, is there a benefit of state ownership versus not state ownership? I think with a strategic state asset, benefit of state ownership, there are benefits there. I think we've seen that. So if I look at Lewis, or if I look at other operators, I don't look at them and say, who owns them? I look at them and say, what's their performance like? Can Dublin Bus match their performance and can we beat their performance? If we can do that, I think something very proud for the Irish state is to say, here is a barometer of public transport operators. The state own this. We do it with other state industries, public transport no different. And that's something we should be proud of. And it's something 3,500 employees would say, yeah, proud to work here because we're good, you know.
Talking about strategic assets, you've got depots in some very on some very prime sites around Dublin, including Broadstone here, but Ringsend, Donnybrook, very close to RTE. You've got Cunningham Road out by the Phoenix Park, as one in Clontarf. Yeah. And a lot of commentators, talking about the housing crisis, which has been going on for more than a decade now, a lot of commentators would sort of look at those sites and say, why aren't we building housing on those sites? Why does Dublin Bus need to have a site in a prime location like Ringsend or Donnybrook, etc., when they could be out on the outskirts of the city, you know, maybe in, I don't know, somewhere around the M50 anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say to that?
So we have a depot on the M50, Harristown, just out at the airport.
But all your depots,
isn't there? So, but if you look here, we're sat here in Broadstone, 1847, that this building was built, and it was a railway station back then. The people back then had the foresight to say, we need strategic transport assets. We need to have transport hubs. And they located them, you know, in various areas around the city, and this one remains today. On the footprint of this site, it's part of a regeneration of the Dublin 7 area. We'll have employment of over 1,000 people here, and there'll be downstream employment in the local community because of that. And there'll be people in the local community who work here, and they work here today. We have shops that work here. We have a vibrant area. We have a college that's been built. So we're an integrated part of the community here. If you look at all our the land bank that we have and the depots that we operate out of, Dublin Bus are going out. At present, we're going to tender for guidance and advice on all our depot sites with regards to the strategy of those. And what we're looking at is multi-purpose facilities on our sites. So you have a bus depot at present. What can you do with a bus depot in the future in a city centre environment or out in the outskirts, wherever that may be? If you look at a city centre environment, you'd say, well, you know, there's lots of room above the depot and there's also room below a depot. And what we've seen in a number of cities is you can build above a bus depot and you can house your buses below ground level, and you can build above mixed use, residential, etc. We do it, you know, it's transport orientated development globally, and what you'll see your metro station, your train station, your apartments above it, so, you know, people live above the thing. Bus depots are no different. So we're going out, having a look at those. It's part of a strategic investment that Dublin Bus are looking at. Make sure we've enough capacity in the network to make sure that we can help mobilise the return of the economy. Broadstone building here today adds additional 120 fleet capacity to make sure that we have a sustainable recovery, so businesses and employers can actually get to work. I think as part of a multi-use site, you can look at your Ringsend. You know, there's high-rise apartments around that, so you can decant your buses out of Ringsend, do some retrofitting, build above and put your buses back inside. So at the same time, absolutely, you can operate your buses from, you know, out at on the outskirts. Less efficient to operate public transport services from hubs on the outskirts for urban operations. It is less efficient. You need to look at the sustainability of that. So Ringsend Depot, our bus routes start outside the bus depot. So there is, you know, an extreme sustainability there in terms of routes point to point. And I think, you know, with a modern workplace and the sustainability agenda, Dublin Bus are going out and saying, look, we have these depot assets there. What's the best use of those for the company and for the city?
So there is the potential that down the road there could be housing built on some of these depots that I just mentioned.
There could be mixed residential or commercial use above them. There could be, and I've been to sites in Paris and Stockholm, and you're just walking down a normal high street, as they would say, and a bus will come out. And so, you know, the future buses in Dublin Bus is electrification. So, you know, these are quiet vehicles. The maintenance of them is done at ground level. And, you know, above them you'd have, you know, depends what the city wants. Is it commercial? Is it residential? Is it public housing?
Whatever's
required. We're going to tender this year for feasibility studies. So that's it's due in the next 2 months. So that's something we've been working on in the background, because, you know, we're not wedded to this can only ever be something here, you know. What we're looking at is, you know, what's the future possibilities in these sites? And I think we've seen that here with Broadstone.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. Have you any sense of how much housing you might be able to build, or what the sites might be worth, or how much commercial you might get into them?
No, I think if you look at the sites that we have, they're all operational. Every single one of the sites is operational. That's the primary objective of the bus depots, is to be operational bus sites. And I think what you have is, you know, there's obviously the Land Development Agency, and we've met them last year. We have our COE group, who would be major property holders. And what you've got to see is what are the operational needs for a mobility in the city. It's an urban environment. You know, people are still going to need to come into the city. I think the population is going to increase. So office space is still going to remain slightly different, but you're still going to need vast amount of people to come into the city. So you're going to have to bring them in on public transport if we want it to be sustainable. So, you know, we've 8 bus depots. I think what we have is a requirement now to operate 1,000 vehicles. Within the next 10 years, you'd be requiring for Dublin Bus to operate 1,300 vehicles. So that's a big site, an additional depot that would be required on top of the depot we're sitting in today. And, you know, there's two factors then. You'd be looking at it's the economics of building above a depot. And so the economics will have a key factor. And then obviously there'd be the we're a state-owned asset, but we're a commercial semi-state. And, you know, we're saying, look, there's options in our current footprint, but there's also options that we can look at. But we do need strategic state assets. I think we do see every so often very visible cues of why bus depots are important and why they're situated where they are. And that's immediate access to the bus network, to the roads network. So and where we really see that come to the fore is, you know, in extreme weather events, which are getting more and more frequent. So pre-COVID, climate was the number one issue. That's going to be the number one issue after COVID. So, you know, there's been, you know, for the last 10 years, we've had, I think, 3 extreme weather events. We've had flooding events. What's important was that the buses were able to get access to the bus network straight away. And we're in Broadstone today, and you have a bus lane right outside. You have access to the city centre. That's important because the economy still needs to move, you know. So
I'm sure you've war gamed this. So what's your best guess as to when your entire fleet might be back on the road, working at full tilt?
I think the entire fleet will be back working on the road full tilt in Q2 this year, no question. The capacity issue, that'll be a decision for the government around how many people can go on. But in terms of our
fleet, when I say full tilt, I mean a full capacity.
Full capacity. Again, what's full capacity of the future? The operating model in public transport might change. So, you know, you mentioned earlier, so you sweat the assets are. There's a phrase, tree bell load, would have been, you know, public transport phrase, where when the bus is full, the conductor used to pull on the rope 3 times, ding, 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 bus is full, work away. You know, what's a full bus of the future? Are people going to stand, 15 people standing on the lower deck of a saloon? Maybe not. Will it be safe to do so? The bus is certainly a safe environment. So I think what you'll have is an operating model that, you know, define what a full bus is. It might be 80% capacity, and that might be termed now it's a full bus. I think the days, and we've moved away from this. You see in Asia, you would have seen the old pictures of the person in the Japanese metro station with the white gloves on pushing people onto the tram. They're gone, and they operate in Asia. 80% full is a full vehicle now, and the reason they do that is because they've gone through the viruses before. So we've had respiratory viruses, so they had SARS, and what they realized then was, look, you know, after SARS, like, people just, their behaviour changed. And so over there, a full bus is an 80% full bus. And I think, to me, that's probably where we'll get to a figure around 80% would be deemed a full. Of course, to keep the same level of service, you now need 20% additional fleet to carry the same amount of passengers. So for us to carry 143 million customers again, you're going to need an additional 20% of fleet. Then you've got to build in the work from home scenario and how often are people going to use those. And what you still have to plan for is everybody might want to come in at a particular time. So I think the commute patterns will shift a little bit. So I think 80% would be the new kind of 100% if that makes sense. And we build our operating model. Yeah, build our operating model and our expectations off that. And I think government have seen it. I think business communities have seen it. that what's public transport for? Like before, you might have been, you know, somebody look at a bus or a tram or a train and say, that's a waste of money. It's not full. It's not packed to the gills. It's like, no, that's serving a purpose. And the purpose is, you know, mobility is for the many, but it's for the benefit of them all. And I think, you know, the mindset must be invest in public transport, invest in employment, not just public transport, not just Dublin Bus now, but invest in employment, invest in our cities so people can move around and have choice to move around. And that's where the micro-mobility and the demand response and the technology firms play a role. And what you'll have then is, what's the value of this? And it's like, well, you can get to work. You're healthy, safe environment. You can choose to come and go at whatever time. Because what you'd have today is somebody say, well, why are people coming in at 9 o'clock? They're all coming in. It's because their employers all told them.
By the way, do you get the bus to work every day?
Not every day. But I'd be what you call a multimodal public transport person. Like,
so many days a week you drive to the office?
I drove today because I was parking. Now, I will say this, it's an electric car, so that's the one good thing I have. But generally I would cycle. That would be my modus operandi. COVID changed a bit of that but I'd be conscious not to use the bus because I go into the office maybe twice a week and it's, you know, it's an essential journey. But I'm conscious of the people on the bus that, hey, listen, you know, if there's somebody else who's gone to a frontline essential thing, I let them on the bus. What I do, I've always been a public transport, like, yeah, I don't drive much at all. But I do understand I need to. And, you know, sometimes my job might demand that I'd drive the car. So pre-COVID, I'd drive out to the depots in the morning, I'd drive out to them at night because I wanted to visit a few. So I'm not going to do that on a bus because it wasn't a bus route that suited it. But you'd see me on the bus, you'd see me on the train, you'd see me on the bike. That would be my primary mode, would be the bike. But I think the bus, I've always used the bus. I think it's good. I think it's good that our employees who are exceptional and have been exceptional right through this, because we were sending them out saying, look, we need you to continue operating. And, you know, potentially they're in fear, but I think they'd see you on the bus and I think they appreciate it. And sure, you look at my Twitter account, there's pictures of me all over the buses there, you know, and it's promoting public transport. And I promote all modes, so I'm not just a bus is good and everything else is bad. I think it's mobility is good. Sustainable mobility is good and, you know, that'll change, you know.
All right. Ray Coyne, Chief Executive of Dublin Bus, thank you for joining us at Business.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Ray Coyne, Chief Executive of Dublin Bus. Declan Conlon produced the show this week. Remember, you can get the latest Irish Times business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Ciarán Hancock. Until next time, take care and stay safe.